Hi there, and welcome to another one of my podcasts. This time I'm going to feature something rather unusual. Two great baritones. Not only were they both baritones, but they both had the same parents. Yes, brothers indeed. The first I've played one track of before, and his name was Renato Zanelli. He was born in Chile, though his father was Italian, and only his mother was Chilean. And he was born in 1892. His father had a factory, something to do with saltpeter, I understand. But as happens, sometimes his voice was discovered by chance, and he studied and made his debut finally in 1916 in Faust, and became what I regard as one of the great baritones, actually. And he had a pretty good career as a baritone, ending up at the Metropolitan Opera House, staying there till 1923. But he wasn't satisfied with that for some reason, and left for Italy, studied further, and became a tenor. And indeed, it did give him a bigger career, but personally, I don't think he was as great a tenor as he was a baritone. So I'm going to give you one of his recordings made when he still was a baritone. He's singing one of the arias from Rigoletto, Parisiamo. This was recorded in 1919. Renato Zanelli. Sadly, he had a very short life. He was cut down by a nasty illness in 1935, which means that he was only 43 when he died. Well, here he is at the peak of his baritone career, and as I think you'll hear, one of the great baritones.
Alpaniamo, l'uomo sonio che rida, ai qual costagna. Mi faceste voi arrobbia e ser di parma arrobbia e ser buffona non dover non poterò questo padrone mio, giovin, giocondo, si potente, bello, sonnecchiando mi dice, fa chi ride, buffone, portarmi da giù e farlo, oh, oh donna Dio! Odio a voi, artigiani schernitori, quanto in mordervi io gioio, e iniqua son, ercano la vostra thank you.
And from there, I'm going to jump several decades. And just for once, this is going to be somebody whom I knew personally. Dick James is probably remembered now as the publisher of the Beatles and Elton John. And a very nasty picture of him has been drawn in a recent film about Elton John. Dick himself was a really nice man. I don't know why he was portrayed in that way, except that I know that Elton John and he didn't really get on, even though he really created Elton John's career. He was born with a very different name, Leon Isaac Vatnik, and his parents were Polish-Jewish immigrants, just like my grandparents, and maybe that's why we got along so well, because we sort of understood one another in that sense. I was signed to him in between the Beatles and Elton John, but foolishly wanted to complete my degree in philosophy, and therefore wasn't there when Dick started his DJM record label. Oh well, never mind. What people don't know is that he had a whole career before he became a publisher. He was born in 1920, and by the time he was 17, he was already interested in the popular music of his time, and even at the age of 17 was regularly singing at a place called the Cricklewood Palais. I know exactly where that is, or used to be anyway. And then he joined the Henry Hall Band, which was one of the leading dance bands, and he made his first radio broadcast in 1940, but of course was then swallowed up by the British Army in 1942. Happily he survived, and he continued to sing with all the top bands, including Geraldo, and even sang with the Stargazers occasionally, which was a popular 1950s close harmony group in Great Britain. He made records and was himself often found in the top 10 vocal charts alongside famous popular singers of the 50s here, like Dickie Valentine. For those of you who have talking pictures, and they sometimes show a TV series of the 50s called The Adventures of Robin Hood, it is Dick James who is singing Robin Hood, riding through the glen. However, for some unknown reason, he decided at the age of only 38 that he no longer wanted to be a singer. Maybe he just felt that the way music was going didn't suit his singing style, or he was thinking about his future and decided that it might be a good idea to get on the other side of music. But for whatever reason, he joined Sidney Bronn's music as a song plugger, and then finally started his own little publishing company, and it was a little one, in 1961. It was in 1963 that Brian Epstein walked in looking for a publisher for a song called Please Please Me by an unknown group back then called The Beatles. The good thing about Dick James is he had great ears, and he always knew when a song or a group had potential. He told me that he never dreamed that the Beatles would go as far as they did, but he could hear something about them. Dick called the TV show Thank Your Lucky Stars, which was just about the only pop show on TV at the time, and managed to get the Beatles the new group spot. And, well, the rest, as they say, is history. Brian Epstein promised him the publishing, Northern Songs was created, and, well, Dick became a millionaire. He was always, as I said, a lovely man. People forget what a good singer he was, however. So I'm going to play you a recording of his back in 1948 for HMV, when he sang his version of Nature Boy, probably influenced by the version by Nat Cole. But whatever, it's good singing, and it explains why he had good ears. He was a first-rate British popular singer of his time. So let's hear Dick James, a forgotten voice now, but undeservedly so.
Mm-hmm. was a boy, a very strange, enchanted boy. They say he wandered very far over land and sea. A little shy and sad of eye, but very wise was he. And then one day, a magic day, he passed my way. And while we spoke of many things, fools and kings, this he said to me. The greatest thing you'll ever learn is just to love and be loved in return. Greatest thing you'll ever learn is just to love and be loved in return.
And now we're going back to the 30s. I know I've said more than once that my favourite jazz, probably if I had to choose, would be the black big bands of the 30s. One of them was somehow never quite what it could have been because it was used as a sort of stand-in band when people like Duke Ellington and Cab Calloway weren't available. And in fact, they were based at the Cotton Club, which of course made Duke Ellington and Cab Calloway famous. The other thing about this band, which was called the Mills Blue Rhythm Band, at least sometimes, is that it had different names and different leaders. It began as the Coconut Grove Orchestra and changed its name to the Mills Blue Rhythm Band only when Irving Mills became its manager a year later. Over the years, it's known as the Blue Rhythm Band, Blue Ribbon Band, Blue Rhythm Boys, the Blue Racketeers, Earl Jackson's Musical Champions, Duke Wilson and his 10 Blackberries, King Carter's Royal Orchestra, nothing to do with Benny Carter, Mills Music Masters. So you see, it was a sort of go-to band when the famous ones weren't available. At least that's what it seems to me. Nevertheless, they worked throughout the 1930s and made fine recordings. Their final leader was a gentleman called Lucky Millinder, who took the role over as leader in 1934. They made a whole lot of records for Brunswick, Columbia, Victor, all sorts of other labels. But despite having a few hit records like Trucking or Ride Red Ride, they never really became one of the top bands. And I think the reason is because they were sort of used as a stand-in band when the famous ones weren't available. However, the musicianship was never doubted, and I'm going to give you one of their recordings right now. It was recorded in 1932, and this particular version of the band was known as Baron Lee and his Blue Rhythm Orchestra. And the tune here is called Sentimental Gentleman from Georgia, and it's a bit more up-tempo than you would think from a title like that. Great jazz of the time. 1932, Baron Lee's Blue Rhythm Band. Thank you.
sentimental gentleman from Georgia, Georgia, gentle to the ladies all the time. And when it comes to loving, he's a real professor, yes, sir, just a Mason-Dixon Valentine. Oh, see those Georgia peaches hanging around him now, 'cause what this baby teaches, nobody else knows how. That sentimental gentleman from Georgia, Georgia, gentle to the ladies all the time.
And now we come to the other brother. He wasn't as famous as Renato Zanelli. His name was Carlo Morelli. At least that's what he decided to be known as. He was, of course, brother of Renato, and his surname was really Zanelli. He first studied engineering, but almost exactly the same as his brother 5 years later, because he was born 5 years later. He also started singing and studied singing and began his career in Italy in 1921, when his brother would still have been a baritone. He learned quite a few different roles. I personally think he's best, like his brother, as a Verdi baritone. But he sang in all sorts of operas, like La Valli, Pagliacci, and even sang some Wagner roles. Because he's 5 years younger than his brother, and because he didn't become a tenor, by the time he started recording, it was already in the electric era. So whereas we can only hear his brother as a baritone acoustically, Carlo we can hear recorded with a microphone. And it's a very similar voice to his brother. So in a way, we're hearing both of them. This is a typical recording of his from Il Trovatore, Il Balen del Suo Sorriso. And it's as good as 95% or more of the recordings of this aria. So I commend highly to you the singing of Carlo Morelli. This is recorded in 1928.
Le favalli in me.
dare mi cor all'amor l'amore un dardo le fa valli in mio favore per del sole d'un suo sguardo la tempesta dal mio cor all'amor l'amore un dardo le fa valli in mio favore per del sole guarda la tempesta perde il sole d'un suo sguardo la tempesta del mio cor la tempesta
Carlo Morelli happily lived much longer than his brother and long enough to retire in Mexico City and become a vocal teacher. He died at the age of 73. Now for something completely different, as they used to say. We go back 10 years to the era of acoustic recording and we listen to a gentleman who was called Abraham Finkelstein when he was born. That was never going to be a very commercial name. So, like Dick James, he changed his name and he became known as Arthur Fields. And he, whilst not being a great singer, sang a lot of popular songs and also wrote them. He was born in 1884 and by 1908 he was already professional enough to join Guy Brothers' minstrel show and help form a vaudeville act called Weston, Fields and Carroll. I don't know quite what happened to the others. But by 1912, he'd written a song called On the Mississippi, which was a sort of hit for him. And he went on to write quite a few popular songs, one of the most successful of which was Abba Dabba Honeymoon, which was written in 1914. From 1914 onwards, he recorded for all sorts of gramophone labels and tended to write sort of novelty songs with titles like The Shoes We Have Left Are All Right, or You're My Little Rhapsody in Blue. Not really one of the great songwriters along the lines of Gershwin or Berlin, but popular enough, and he did what he did, and he worked in vaudeville shows and so forth. Sadly, in 1953, he suffered a stroke, but that didn't kill him. What killed him was that he then moved into a nursing home and died in a fire there. Not a nice end. And he was 68 and could obviously have lived a lot longer. The song I'm going to sing you is an unusual one. It was obviously written as a morale booster. During World War I, America only joined, as usual, the World War right at the end. So soldiers are really only going over there in 1918, which is precisely when this was recorded. And the idea of this song is obviously, doesn't matter how many German soldiers you send up against our American lads, we'll knock them down. Obviously, he had no idea what things were really like at the front, but that wasn't the point of the song. It was a morale booster. What's interesting for me is it appeared on a Little Wonder record. These were small records of the time, a record company that made little records, literally little ones, like 5.5-inch single-sided records instead of 10. So this recording is quite short. It's less than 2 minutes, rather like the old original cylinder recordings. However, we get some sort of ideas of the sort of thing that Arthur Fields did, and, well, here it is.
Our Yankee soldiers fighting in the trenches over there all sing a little air that makes the Germans swear. The Huns attack, and then our boys go at 'em with a swing. It drives the Germans crazy to hear the Yankees sing. We'll keep sending them over, and we'll keep knocking them down. We'll plant them under the clover, 6 feet under the ground. Send on every Hun no matter how tall, the bigger they come, the harder they fall. So you'll keep sending them over, and we'll keep knocking them down. You'll keep sending them over, and we'll keep knocking them down. We'll send them under the slow bar, 6 feet under the ground. For every American soldier who fell, we'll send 100 Germans to hell. So you'll keep sending them over, and we'll keep knocking them down.
I think that Arthur Fields' most famous song actually was his 1919 tune called How You Gonna Keep Them Down on the Farm After They've Seen Paris. Anyway, moving on, we're now going to have a track of somebody I'm amazed I've never played you before, because he was one of the great jazz musicians. He sadly only lived 50 years, but he changed music. His name, of course, was Lester Young. He was born in Mississippi in 1909. And he died in 1959. He grew up in a musical family. His father was a teacher and band leader, and he sort of grew up in New Orleans, which was not exactly the worst place to grow up if you wanted to be a jazz musician. By the time he was 10, he could play a little bit of trumpet, violin, and drums, and joined the Young family band, touring with carnivals and playing all over the place. He left when he was 18, however, because he refused to tour the southern United States, where black people were treated so badly. He became a member of the Bostonians, led by Art Bronson, and then changed to tenor saxophone. He tended to work a bit in the band, then leave and go home, and then come back again. He left home finally in 1932, when he became a member of the famous Blue Devils, one of the great southwestern bands, led by the bass player Walter Page. He therefore settled in Kansas City, and it wasn't long before he joined the Count Basie Orchestra, and of course that's where he made his name, because he had a new way of playing the tenor, different from that of Coleman Hawkins, who was the dominant player of his time with a big, fat sound. Lester was influenced much more by the C melody saxophone of Frankie Trumbull, and therefore his sound was lighter and just different. Of course, his style led to the beginning of what we might call modern jazz, bebop. Charlie Parker loved what he was doing, and, well, as they say, the rest is history. After he left Count Basie's band, he got trapped in the army, and unlike white jazz musicians, was not assigned to a band, but just to be an ordinary soldier. His response was to sort of keep himself happy using such things as alcohol and, worse still, marijuana. And these were found amongst his possessions, and he was court-martialed. He did not deny what he was doing, and therefore had to serve a whole year in something called the detention barracks, after which he was dishonorably discharged in late 1945. That experience gave its name to this track, which was recorded in 1945 with a band including Vic Dickinson on trombone. It was called DB Blues. The DB stood for Detention Barracks. It's a standard blues of the time, but you hear Lester Young's sound and his approach to jazz quite clearly, and the way he heralded the beginning of bebop. Lester Young. Thank you. Now we come to my track. I'm recording this towards the end of September, when we've just had announced in Great Britain that even more restrictions are to be placed on what we can do in order to avoid further deaths from COVID-19, since some irresponsible people have been getting together and spreading the infection. Since I hardly go out anyway because I have no gigs, and also try not to spend anything, since as a freelance musician I've received absolutely no financial help from our Philistine Tory government, I've been trying to do things that don't cost me anything and mean that I don't have to go out. Two things have cropped up recently. I was contacted by Jazz FM because they're doing a series about the history of jazz in Great Britain. Amazing, jazz on Jazz FM, that's quite a novelty. They very rarely do anything about jazz, despite their name. And somebody knew that I was friends with Adelaide Hall, the great jazz singer, who preceded Ella and Billy by 15, 16 years. And I have a conversation that I had with her when I first met her. So we've been talking about that. And also I've been talking to a jazz archive about a treasure trove of letters and recordings left to me by Renee Diamond, whom you won't know, but she was an absolute rock in the lives of people like Coleman Hawkins, Duke Ellington, Benny Carter, etc., when they would come over here to tour way back in the 30s and so forth. She left me all these things, and I in return got to play her piano, the piano that was actually a housewarming gift to her from Duke Ellington. And when I wrote a suite of tunes about the life of Duke Ellington, I added a little piano piece which was a portrait of Rene herself, and I recorded it on that very piano. It's called Lady in a Mink Coat, and this is that recording. It's not the greatest playing in the world, nor is it the greatest sound quality in the world, but I thought it might be of some interest to you. So with that, I add the usual things about please spread the word about my 78 RPM podcast. We still don't have that many listeners to it, and it would be lovely if people were able to learn more about the music which preceded the 1960s. It seems to be a closed book to so many people. I actually have met people who've never heard of Bing Crosby. And also, if any of you would like to take up the hobby of 78 record collecting, particularly if you like opera, I have many doubles which are taking up room here and which obviously I can't throw away. So I want to have a good home for them, and my prices are much, much lower than those you'd have to pay to dealers. And following that, as always, until next time, I say to you, au revoir.